Ladies and gentlemen, the World Wide Web proudly presents... Recorded live in Chicagoland, USA.
Insert witty thing here.
A new episode of the podcast, Luke and Carrie's Bad Rapport. With your hosts, Luke Ski and Carrie Dalby.
I don't feel like singing. You feel like singing?
No.
Okay, never mind. Hi.
I was surprised how well I did it last time.
Yeah, that was, yeah. I'm too tired to sing today, though.
Okay.
Hi, this is Luke.
Hi, this is Carrie.
And you're listening to Luke and Carrie's Bad Rapport. Amazing.
We're both pretty wiped today because we just got back from PenguinCon.
Yes. I gotta keep reminding myself not to lean on the table because I don't want to bump the microphone, because just before we started, I attempted to adjust the microphone stand and I ended up breaking the part that attaches my $300 microphone to the mic stand. So now I'm using a different mic stand, which is not designed for it, and it's sort of doing it. It's holding it up, but I'm afraid if I bump the table, it's going to fall off and break, yeah. And then things will be full of fail.
So comments go at the beginning of the show.
Yay for comments that go at the beginning of shows and stuff. All right, we only got one comment on the Bad Rapport / Pot of Destiny team-up episode for MarsCon, and it was from Insane Ian, who said, wait, I was in the room when that was being recorded? Maybe that's why I didn't say anything. I had no idea. Seriously, no clue. I must have been in my own little world. Strange.
Yeah, the funny thing is I didn't remember him being there either, but...
I remember during that time, he was mainly up in the Musician's Lounge watching the Oscars with, I think, Balder and Steve Goody and the rest of Nuclear Bubble Wrap. But I think...
He wandered in later?
Yeah, I think Ian and a couple of the other Nuclear Bubble Wrap guys wandered in, like, you know, as we were doing it. And because at one point during the thing, I'm like, oh, and don't forget at opening ceremonies, Insane Ian was our host. And everyone's like, yay. And I'm pretty sure I did that being cued on, looking over, and oh, look, there's Ian. I'll mention him so he gets some accolades for his good performance. So
you got to use the word accolades.
Yes. I can mark that off my verbal bucket list.
That's different than Kool-Aids. You can have accolades, or you can have Kool-Aids, or you can just have AIDS. All right, let me read the next comment.
Okay. That sounds like one of those, like, fuck, marry, kill games. It's like, you know, would you rather have... All right, Moley or Curly, who gets accolades, who gets Kool-Aids, and who just gets AIDS? And then you go, and you have to figure out who gets what.
And coincidentally, you're wearing a Three Stooges t-shirt. So for episode 13, Byron Lee says, I've seen some pretty stinky movies and come away with an appreciation of them, but one of the biggest theatrical disappointments for me was a movie based on a book which I thought was awesome. Unfortunately, the movie didn't do it justice, and I came away feeling that my mind had been raped. The movie was called The Time Traveler's Wife. It's kind of a chick book, but there's some really awesome sci-fi shit in there, too. You'll like it. Go read it. The movie blew chunks. You could probably live without seeing it. And I'll mention, as I did in the comments, that I have listened to the audio form of The Time Traveler's Wife, the book, and I actually thought that was horse shit also. So I will definitely not waste my time seeing the movie. And you don't waste your time on it either, Luke, okay?
Okay. All right. Randy Porter says, if I ever do a podcast this long, I'm just going to call it The Godfather. Always glad to hear a new episode of the show, even though I technically just downloaded it and haven't listened yet. In a recent episode, you mentioned The Shawshank Redemption being remade on Howard the Duck's home planet. Dare we call it The Wa-shank Redemption?
I don't get it.
I don't get it either. Also, Abe Vigoda was a traitor to the family, and you won't see Paulie around here no more. Okay. Those are Godfather references.
Oh, well, I've only seen it once, which means I haven't seen it.
Do you know who I am? I'm Mo Green!
There's a horse head on a pillow. That's all I remember.
Okay, wait, let me just tell this really quick. My friend Rock and Roll Ray of Ray TV fame, every so often, I would just call him and say weird shit and hang up the phone. One time after watching the Godfather movies, I call Ray into the phone and I say to him, "Do you know who I am? I am Mo Green." And I hear him start cracking up and I hang up the phone.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Don't you have multiple friends that you, like, communicate with that way on the telephone?
Yes. Actually, well, let's finish the comments and then I'll touch upon that before we move on to our next thing.
Dracona says, "Here's the site for your 80s tune fix list." And he gives a website that you can go to the website and look at. Also, Wolfman Jack has a separate cartoon and another long, linky link. And then he says, "I remember that and the Rubik's Cube Menudo Hour, the Nintendo cartoons, Captain N, Super Mario Super Show, The Legend of Zelda, and SMB3. All right, you get Tom Reed's epic comment.
Well, I wanted to comment on that. I went to the links he provided and I read up reminding myself of what that Wolfman Jack cartoon was and kind of reconfirming, like, yes, it did exist, I wasn't imagining it. And the fact that this was another one that I kind of meant to add to the list of, you know, things only Luke remembers. Another cartoon is this one he mentioned, the Rubik's Cube cartoon.
Yeah.
Where, do you remember that at all? Do you have any idea what
Never
I'm talking
heard
about?
Of it.
Okay. But you know what a Rubik's Cube is, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So here was the premise of this cartoon that was on Saturday mornings. It was like Rubik the Magical Cube. And when Rubik was like all solved and all the sides were the same, he had like this weird little kind of cute gnomey face that was like blue on the front of it. I can't remember if he had arms or legs. I think he might have. But it was like a typical high-pitched, like, "Hello, my name is Rubik." And Rubik was owned by, like, you know, a brother and sister, like two young Hispanic kids and a dog. And here's another thing. I can't remember if I mentioned this the last time I ranted about old 80s cartoons, but there was this period of time, particularly in Hanna-Barbera, where I remember they would just shove Hispanic characters in all over the fucking place. It was like they got some kind of, like, way before political correctness became a big thing, they just did, like, market research and realized, hey, there aren't enough Hispanic people watching our cartoons.
And then suddenly they were everywhere.
Yeah, and exactly. Remember there was a cartoon where it was, like, Scooby, Shaggy, Daphne, Scrappy-Doo, and a Hispanic kid. Do you remember that?
It's no.
Like, there were Hispanic kids being shoved into Hanna-Barbera cartoons all the fucking time. So, and like it said here, this was the Rubik's Cube / Menudo Hour. So Menudo had a cartoon, too, that was coupled with the Rubik's Cube cartoon with the two kids that, you know, and so basically,
you
so
guys
it's like,
should have seen the look on my face when he was describing Rubik's cartoon.
It was quite priceless. So basically, it's like when Rubik was solved, it's like he was alive and he was okay, and he was like some kind of magical entity that granted wishes. However, if somebody picked up the cube and like scrambled all the colors around, it would be like, oh no! And then like when he was when it was unsolved, then he wouldn't be like alive, and it was like, you know, oh no, the peril! Now we're, you know, trapped in this, you know, coal mine, and there's, you know, kidnappers after us. You know, who will save us? Not Rubik, because he's not solved. We have to solve the Rubik's Cube so Rubik can come back to life and use his magical Rubik powers to save the Hispanic children and their dog. I love American television for children.
That's so retarded. Oh my god, look at all that.
Oh, okay. Well, it'll be fixed by level later.
Wow, that's incredibly retarded. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
Oh, so, I don't mean retarded. I mean,
And for the record, I did watch Captain N and the Super Mario Super Show and The Legend of Zelda and the Super Mario Brothers 3 cartoon.
Christ. Is there anything you didn't watch?
The A-Team.
Okay. I watched the A-Team.
I didn't watch Knight Rider.
Why are you
either?
Handing this back to me? You're supposed to
read. Oh, it's my
this.
Turn?
Yes.
That's right. Tom Reed says, "Carrie, if you think The Time Traveler's Wife was lousy as a movie and a book, wait for the TV series. Yes, I heard ABC was developing a pilot for the series. I guess the executives were thinking of a female Quantum Leap or Doctor Who thing. Since I no longer work in TV, I don't care. Anyway, I think it was courageous that Luke revealed the contents of Dasynkowski's notebook. A lot of people misunderstand the use of ideas. They get an idea and they hang on to it, sometimes ragging the poor thing to shreds in an attempt to do something with it. But, excuse me.
Hit. He's too far away.
That was unintentional. But like other
creative... It doesn't matter. It's still a burp.
But like other creative folk, Luke knows that ideas are all over the place, and if one doesn't work out, you can go on to the next one or the one after that. Thanks for the peek behind the curtain, Luke. It must have been as embarrassing as you showing the contents of your underwear drawer. No, I'll show you the contents of my underwear drawer. This was more embarrassing than that. Or that box in your basement with all those hentai stories about Scrotor. Well, you know, that's the fanfic I'm writing, you know, in the future. I got an idea for a Circus of What sketch involving Scrotor.
Okay.
I mean, guys will do it. I was writing it and, you know, going really... I better not say anything else because I want to preserve the comedic effect.
Yes.
When the time finally comes. Say hello to the gopher and the rabbit. Funny with the Luke gopher in the webpage cartoon is eating veggies and the carrier rabbit isn't. That ain't the way I remember you guys.
I laughed out loud when I read that, Tom. Because, yeah, I'm the one who actually eats vegetables and Luke, not so much.
Well, the gopher in the backyard is the one who's munching on grass, so I was trying to be accurate to the backyard. Not to inside the house.
Okay.
By the way, now conveniently, since the mic broke and we had to put it on a small stand on a table, Luke has me faced away from the window so I can't watch the animals, and he knows I want to.
Well, there aren't any out there right now.
Well, if there's one, like, other than a squirrel, if there's, like, something cool out there, you better, like, let me know.
All right.
So now we get to talk...
Maybe there's more comments.
Oh, shit. Crazy St. Louis Fangirl says... Yeah, cool. My family used to have bad movie night. Harold and Maude was one of the movies we watched, as was the original Death Race 2000. My favorite bad movie is Sam Raimi's Lunatics. The only movie that was bad enough we never finished was Will Wheaton's The Curse. Loved this episode. Not only did you play my favorite all-time Weird Al song, but you sang a parody of it. That's awesome. I didn't know that was anyone's all-time favorite Weird Al song.
Well, there you go. So there's a voicemail from Arkel.
Were we going to do that now?
Let me see.
Oh, I thought we were going to do that towards the end of the show.
No, there's two. We're going to do one now and one later. I'm just trying to remember or figure out. Let's see. 2:29 p.m., 12:43 p.m. This is the first one. Okay. So here is a voice message from Arkel.
Hey, Luke and Carrie. It's Arkel. Listening to the last show, and you're talking about the worst movie ever made. I can top both of you. I mean, for starters, I like Harold and Maude and Across the Universe, so I'm not going to get into that. But, okay, well, my second in that list would actually be the 1990, I think it was 1990 and 1991, Captain America movie. And if you don't remember it, I envy you. But the absolute worst movie ever is a movie from 1995 called The Doom Generation. See, I'd go into why that movie was so horrible, but the phone would cut me off mid-stride, and I'd lose my train of thought, but, oh. I mean, wow. Okay, well, let me just say that the great character actors Nikki Catt and Parker Posey appear in the movie in small roles, as well as Jane's Addiction's Perry Farrell, and I can only assume that that means that all three of them had late mortgage payments that week. That was the only rational explanation I could think of for them being in that movie. I refused to go to sleep the night I watched that because I was afraid that scenes from the movie would enter my dreams, and we haven't invented 24-hour drive-through therapy yet.
So there we go. Thank you, Arkel.
Thanks, Arkel.
I have not heard of that movie. I've heard of the Captain America movie. I don't know if Roger Corman directed it, but I think it's from the same ilk as the Fantastic Four movies. Like, they made them and they didn't get released in a regular fashion, you know, so there's bootlegs around.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, and now it is time for our... let's do that later.
All right.
Now it is time for our super intellectual and stimulating discussion of Kentucky Fried Chicken, also known as KFC's new product known as the Double Down. Would you like to describe, Luke, what the Double Down is before we begin?
Well, many people on the internet and the webification machines have been discussing it since it got launched. And basically, the word got out about it like months and months ago when it was being test marketed. Like, certain cities in the country, main one being Toledo. Toledo is, like, the number one test market country for fast food restaurants. There's more fast food restaurants per capita in Toledo than there is in anywhere else in the USA.
So Toledo is a tasty place to live.
Hell yeah.
So,
or it's a tasty place to live, especially if you like experimental fast food. So,
so what is the double down?
So basically, they came out with these breaded fillets, these breaded chicken breast fillets that aren't like as thick as they normally are. They're kind of flat, so they probably like take a regular breast fillet, cut it in half, so they can kind of get two out of it instead of one. And then they take those, and then they either do it in the traditional KFC original recipe breading, or they can do it in the new grilled fashion they've been doing things lately, which, you know, has less calories, supposedly.
It does.
Those came out a few months ago, I think.
But other than that, what's inside?
I need to explain. So basically, there's these fillets that you can buy individually for like whatever it is, like $1.99 each. So instead of getting like a bunch of little nuggets that are like all misformed meat, it's like you're getting somewhat of a decent, you know, white meat chicken breast with the original recipe, you know, flavor to it, and you know, you can kind of, you know, eat them a few at a time. And I, you know, when they first came out and I first ordered them, I kind of went nuts. I'm like, okay, give me four of them. And then it's kind of like with certain places like White Castle, it's like, it took me several visits to figure out what the correct number of burgers for me to order at White Castle was, because if you order two, you're still hungry. If you order 10, you have some left over. It took me a while to figure out that between 4 and 6 is the right number for me when it comes to White Castle. I don't eat White Castle too much at all anymore. I think I just hit a point in my adult life where my brain just said, no more!
Well, they have delicious chicken rings and crinkly fries.
Yeah,
but so you were eating these chicken breasts.
So these new boneless fillets that they've been selling. The first time I got four, that seemed to be too many. And then I kind of figured out with some trial and error that it was basically two is a good number for me to get. Three if I'm particularly like really hungry and hadn't eaten that day. So next step of this is people at KFC took those same boneless fillets, you know, with the original recipe breading, and then said, okay, here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna take two of them and use them as if they were bread in a sandwich, and then put between them cheese, bacon, and some kind of little bit of a special sauce, and like basically put those in between two of them as a sandwich, and they started selling it as a double down.
Yes.
And when the test markets started doing this, like, you know, sometime last year, like every stand-up comedian in the country and late-night comic heard about it and started making jokes about it. In fact, when I saw Patton Oswalt back in December, he had already had a whole, because he's already known for another piece about KFC's famous bowls. He already had a whole thing on the double down, like taking that to the next step, you know. So I won't even try to recreate his material, but it was, you know, yeah. So just basically, it became like this. You know, everyone was making fun of it, and then I'm like, wait, I haven't seen this thing anywhere.
Yeah.
And I was asking about it, and people at KFC, you know, were just like,
we don't know.
You know, so then, like I said, then those bonus fillet came out. I'm like, all right, this must be the precursor, and it was, and then bam, the double down came out. And the day it was, like, released, it was like everyone was talking about it on the internet as if it was, like, a movie or a video game or something. It's like, today the day double down comes out.
Yeah.
And like society often does, especially on the internet, things immediately became split into two camps that went from one extreme and one went way to the opposite extreme. You know, one extreme was, oh my god, it's the end of civilization as we know it. KFC is putting out this thing that's so full of calories that you're going to have a heart attack immediately upon eating one. And oh my god, you know, we should just kill ourselves.
The double down of the apocalypse.
Exactly. And then the other extreme was, this is the greatest food product ever invented by man ever, and I will now devote my life to eating nothing but these, and I will guillotine anybody who dares decry the awesomeness of the double down sandwich.
Or like my husband said when I mentioned this product to him earlier, how has one of these not been in my mouth yet?
Yeah. So, you know, I was doing my best, you know, to kind of come at it from this thing like, okay, I'm not going to go to either extreme, but I am at least going to try one and see what I think, because I'm already, you know, I know I eat too much fast food, and I'm going to try my best to cut down. I promised Sarah I would try to do my best to cut down. But, you know, when you're traveling around to cons or I'm traveling around all these caricature gigs and stuff, sometimes it's just like, well, I can, you know, I need to eat at some point. So it's...
I have a feeling there's a lecturing comment from Tom Reed on this.
Yes.
just a little psychic feeling on that.
Yes, yes. So anyway, so the day came out. I happened to... I forgot what else I was doing that day, but it involved going and hanging out with Kiki. For some reason, or helping her with something. So basically, I was hanging out with Kiki the day it came out. So we're like, all right, let's go to KFC, let's get one and have it. And we tried one, and you know, it was tasty. It's like I said, I was trying those original recipe fillets that had already been out. So now it's the same thing with cheese and bacon and some kind of sauce between them, and it's like, yes, this I enjoyed it. You know, it wasn't.
But it's not the best thing in the world.
It's not going to become a way of life for me. But you know, if I go to KFC, it's like, you know, it's like KFC has many things I like. I like the famous bowls. I like the original recipe chicken. You know, I like the popcorn chicken. You know, it has now become yet another item at KFC that I like. So when I go there, I can decide, do I want this or do I want one of these other things?
I really don't go to KFC often because if I went there, I would just order the chicken, and if I ordered the chicken, I would just say to myself, I wish this was spicy Popeyes chicken instead of boring KFC chicken.
I like Popeyes as well. But yeah, it's you know, so
but basically I guess Luke and Carrie are here to represent the middle of the road, because
we're taking a stand here between two extremes so that everyone will still like us. America! I won't do that.
But I mean, you know, I took what was supposed to be one and then ended up being two bites of Luke's double down before this episode so that I could have something relevant to say. And basically, I found it to be too salty. Therefore, I think Josh would absolutely love it. But, basically, other than being too salty, I thought it was tasty. I personally think it's a free fucking country, and that there's worse things out there that people aren't acknowledging, you know, as much as this. Like, you know, some, like the Monster Burger and various things that you can get at fucking Burger King or Hardee's or whatever. I mean, this is just one of many terrible fast food items, terrible for your health fast food items already on the menu, you know?
Like, if you go to Chipotle and you get a chicken burrito that has cheese and sour cream on it, and that's your lunch or whatever, your meal, that's going to be more points than the double down, like on the Weight Watchers points
scale. I bet you that you know, the fish filet at McDonald's, but then they have the double filet during Lent.
Yeah.
That's got the bread. And, like, I don't know, I bet you that's as many or more calories than a double down because it has the bread. Yeah. When you put the double meat on there, but it's just the double meat and, well, and bacon and cheese. But, I mean, you know, not having double meat but not having bread doesn't make it worse. You know, it's, 14 points isn't that. I mean, it's a lot, but it's like, not. It's probably less than a Big Mac, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I forgot how many, because Sarah and I looked it up, and we were like, you know, kind of bored and trying to figure out dietary planning and stuff. And I forgot how many points in the day I'm supposed to eat. I think it's between like 32 and 37 or something like that. So, you know, 14 points, that's like a third of my daily points allotment. So that's a meal. You know, that's one out of three meals in a day. You know, so big freaking deal. You know, it's not going. It was tasty and I liked it, and I will have more in the future, but it's not something I'm going to, you know, eat every day all the time.
So just like all the other moderates in the country, we're taking a stand for nothing. Woo. Yay, nothing.
But here's something I will take a stand on, and it ties in. And I just found out about this literally before I came to pick you up. There's a comedian, and I won't say his name because A, I forgot it, and B, mentioning it would, in my mind, in a way, be like promoting this guy who's a jerk. So if you really want to look it up, you can just do a Google search or something, and you can find it. Apparently, this comedian has been going around performing Patton Oswalt's material as his own.
What?
Yeah. So like, there's a YouTube video that was, you know, captured from, like, one of the clubs. Like, I guess they had a camera set up like they record all their acts and I guess throw them on YouTube to promote the club or whatever. So there's a YouTube of this guy performing Patton Oswalt's KFC bit verbatim.
Oh my God.
And like when other comics went up to the guy and said like, and apparently he seemed like to be doing other material by other comedians too, like Louis C.K. and some other people. Like when comedians confronted him saying, yeah, that's other people's bits, he's like, oh, I write for Patton, I write for Louis C.K., you know, those were my bits.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you know, bullshit.
I'm so sure.
Yeah, and Patton released a statement on his website basically saying how hurt he was and how, you know, that this clearly wasn't an accident, this was clearly theft, and, you know, what kind of bullshit is this? So I hope that, you know, like I said, I just noticed this today, I don't know how new this particular entertainment news item is. I hope every fucking stand-up club in the country hears about this guy so that they know not to fucking hire him, because to me that's like the biggest sin in the world. Like,
yeah,
you can steal other people's jokes. It's like in the video episode we're about to discuss, you know, I did that Rob Parovonian thing and I immediately say, oh, this is a Rob Parovonian reference because I'm not gonna steal his jokes. Or like several episodes ago when I was talking about how I accidentally stole a joke from an episode of The Simpsons in my song about Pamela Anderson back in
and you still feel guilty about it.
I'm still like, oh, fuck.
To this day.
Yeah, you know, which is, and that was another thing. People used, when Robin Williams used to show up just randomly at, like, the Comedy Store to perform or just to hang out, there were many comedians who would not go on stage if they knew Robin Williams was in the room, because Robin's frenetic mind, he just grabs things from everywhere, and so basically Robin will basically accidentally steal people's jokes all the time because he's just so riffing off the top of his head, he doesn't stop to think like, oh wait, I heard that from this other guy,
yeah,
and I'm now taking his joke. So, but yeah, there were comedians who like refused to perform when they knew Robin Williams was in the room.
Wow.
So, you know, anyway, so in order to pay tribute to both KFC and Patton Oswalt for being brilliant and hilarious, our first track of the episode will be a track titled America Has Spoken, which is about, you know, the thing we were just talking about,
and
the piece in question.
And KFC is also brilliant and hilarious.
Yes. All right, so here we go. And then I click a thing, and then things happen, and yeah.
I'm so hungry. What's good to eat here at the Kentucky Fried Chicken, man? What do you have on the menu that's good? Oh, our mashed potatoes are awesome. All right, I'll say that right now. And, our corn is really sweet and crunchy. That's really great. And, oh, we have these little, like, popcorn chicken things that are kind of breaded. I like those. And, oh, duh, if you get the mashed potatoes, you got to get the gravy. The gravy is so tangy. It's really good. Okay, stop right there. Can you pile all of those items into a single bowl? Just kind of make them into a wet mound of starch that I can eat with a spoon like I'm a death row prisoner on suicide watch. Can I just have that instead? Yes, we can do that. We can also arrange those on a plate like you're an adult with dignity and self-respect. You don't have to actually eat your food out of a single bowl. Fuck that. I'm done. I don't give a shit. Just pile all those things in a bowl. Is there a way that the bowl can play This Mortal Coil's It'll End in Tears album while I'm eating it at 2 in the morning in my darkened apartment, just kind of stare into the middle distance? KFC's famous bowls, that's their top-selling item. Can't keep them... America has spoken. Pile my food in a fucking bowl. I don't give a shit. I'll have it all in one fucking... I just want kind of a light brown hillock of glop. If you could put my lunch in a blender and liquefy it and then put it into a caulking gun and inject it right into my femoral artery, even better. But until you invent a lunch gun, I would like a failure pile in a sadness bowl. That is what I want. Give me... pile my food. America! Eating my lunch. punch from a single bowl in my parents' basement where I'm living. Happy birthday, I'm 43. That's how I want my lunch. I don't want to waste those precious calories chewing. Somebody move my jaw for me. Jesus, come work my jaw and help my sloppy pile of food go down.
Welcome back. We've been discussing how I'm a whore.
I think everyone knows that already.
All right.
That's old news.
So, should we call Josh?
Yes, call okay. Josh now, so that after that he can go get my caffeine-free grape open soda that Bill made for me that I have yet to sample. And I need Josh to get it out of the car so I can get it in the fridge.
I forget, is it the 773 number?
No, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right. Every once in a while.
Well,
oh my gosh. Ring. Let's call Josh.
Ding.
That song isn't as good.
No.
Hey Josh, it's Luke.
You're on Luke and Carrie's Bad Rapport. Aren't you excited?
So.
Time to perform.
Yes. So, several weeks ago I loaned you the graphic novel of Scud the Disposable Assassin, the whole shebang, and I would like to know your feelings on it.
First, instead of not listening to Luke during the podcast, I'm not listening to Josh during the podcast. Hey, I usually tell you when I'm not listening to you.
Issue 20 is when he stopped making the comic book, and then, you know, basically went into other creative projects like Channel 101 and Monster House and, you know, many other cool things, and eventually leading to him being the co-creator and director of the Sarah Silverman program on Comedy Central. That would be La Cosa Nostroid, and the leader of that would be Tony Tasty, who is the head of the Cortese crime family in the Neo Dells. And yeah, he actually, I forgot the name of the small town he was born in. I think it's Mayville. He had it in one of the panels, like a sign saying Mayville, however many miles away. But I met him when I was doing comedy sports improv classes in Milwaukee when I was in high school, and Rob and Dan Harmon and a bunch of them were older than me, but they were in the same group, and then they eventually became the Dead Alewives, doing the famous Dungeons and Dragons sketch. Rob Schraub is the Mountain Dew guy in that sketch.
Okay. The I can't imagine missile at the darkness sketch.
Exactly, yes. Yeah, that's Voodoo Ben's plane. That's awesome. The book came out about the same time Tom Smith had his injury, and I sent him a copy of the book as a gift. I don't know if he ever read it, but I'll have to ask him if he ever did. But it is from Image Comics. It's the last time I checked, it ran for about $30, and you can order it from comic shops or, I'm assuming, online as well. But yeah, so because, you know, as we've learned in the past, when I say things, people most often don't listen to me, and it takes somebody else.
I wasn't even in the room.
It takes somebody else saying it to get people to take action, you know, i.e. the MarsCon Dementia Tract fundraiser this past year. So me having Josh say, this book is awesome and you should buy it, hopefully you will all go out and buy it.
Not Carrie.
No, I mean,
Go buy a thing. I'm not sure what we're talking about, but buy it.
Well, you haven't read it yet. Neither has Sarah yet.
I know, I'm making a joke, dumbass.
Okay.
I told you he laughs whenever I...
Okay, well, thank you very much, Josh. We gotta go, because we gotta try to keep this show under 2.5 hours.
Yeah. Preferably...
Alright, talk to you later.
Preferably well under 2 hours.
Yes.
Or well under 2.5 hours.
Okay, I'm going to put the phone back over here. So, Scott the Disposable Assassin, Omnibus, the whole shebang, Image Comics. Get it, goddammit. All right. Hey, we did a video thing.
We did a video episode. We did our first ever video podcast. It is less than 10 minutes long. Surprise, surprise. So,
we managed to encapsulate everything that is Bad Rapport into a 10-minute video episode.
Yes. So, please, please, please watch it, because we decided we're not going to talk that much about it right now, because we don't think all of you guys have seen it, and we want all of you guys to see it before we talk about it.
Yes, and, you know, when we say encapsulated, we mean it does have 4 comedy tracks, you know, most of which are songs. It does have News of the Stupid. It has many of your regular favorite recurring segments of the show, all in a 10-minute video that's on YouTube. I also posted it to the regular podcast feed as an MP4. I know that my podcatcher was able to download it, but then when I tried to transfer it from my podcatcher to my Zen player, it would crash. So apparently it's not working in that fashion for me, but those of you who have, like, iPods and all that super fancy schmancy stuff.
Yeah, I haven't tried it on iTunes and all that yet. I don't know
So if it doesn't work in the podcatchy way, like I said, you can go to YouTube, but please go to badrapport.com and leave comments there, and in our next episode, we'll read those comments back, and we're really psyched.
Yes.
We world premiered it at PenguinCon, and...
Which was the main reason why I drove the 300 miles to PenguinCon, but we'll get to that.
Yeah. So, anyway, yes, go to badrapport.com to find the YouTube link, or I also have it up on lukeski.com. And I've been, you know, tweeting it and Facebooking it all day, so it's not hard to find. Just, you know, go to the usual places. I plug things on the internet and you'll find it.
Are you going
to
talk about this bullet point here? Or save that for next time?
Well, it's, okay. Basically, there's been a lot of people talking about the new version of Scrabble coming out that supposedly, according to the reports, are allowing people to use, like, you know... because the old rules, like, no proper names, no names of products or, you know, whatever. You know, it has to be only words that are found in, you know, standard dictionaries. And now this new version is going to allow all that. And
but it's not going to be Scrabble. It's like Scrabble-like Wakazoo or something. It's a different version of Scrabble.
Well, the way it was originally being reported that people were reacting to was that Scrabble, after decades, has changed the rules now so that you can add all this stuff.
Right.
And, like, all these people were, like, outraged, you know, that once again it's the downfall of American society, everyone's really stupid now, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just thinking to myself, wait a minute, that doesn't make logical sense to me. They're basically saying, here's a game that only allowed this many things. Now we're increasing the number of things that we're allowing, thereby making it like there's now more you can add to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, you know, if I'm sitting there and I have seven letters and five of those letters are P, E, P, S, and I, and I can put that on the board and get points, you know, then yay me, go strategy, I win or whatever. I get points for being able to spell that. And there, people are acting like that somehow makes me stupid for wanting to use something like that. It's like, WTF. So the people who are really outraged are the people who, like certain friends of ours who we love very much, who, you know, spend exorbitant amounts of time, like my brother JT, who has memorized every four-letter word that exists, or every three-letter word that exists, or every two-letter word that exists, so that they can become the Super Ninja Scrabble champions who know every possible permutation, you know. And now because somebody can come along, you know, and you know, make, you know, Pearl Jam, you know, it's like, you know...
Well, Pearl Jam are words, but...
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, it's like a friggin'... Cookie Monster,
like,
you know.
Like the Beatles spelled with an A instead of all E's.
Yeah, yeah, so... Or, you know,
or Lennon.
Cirque du Soleil, what? You know, it's like people can, like, now add that stuff in, and they're acting like, that means America's dumber, and it's not good, and blah, blah, blah. It's like, we're letting more be added into this game. Doesn't that make it harder? Doesn't that make it a harder game than an easier game?
No.
I don't know. It just seems like
it's... But that's very deep, Luke.
Yeah.
So...
Somebody's just going to be pissed off when I whip out some Doctor Who term like Raxacoalco Falpatorians or something like that. I get all the points. Gotch.
So.
Excellent.
PenguCon. Well, first you showed up and you saw some concerts, and at this point I was probably still at work on Friday.
Yeah, I drove out early because I wanted to make sure I had time to put up flyers and get everything all prepped before the Friday night shows began. And I managed to get everything up in time to catch most of the first concert, which was by Soggy Potato Chips. And much to my surprise, Al Cav had a couple other people on stage with him playing instruments. So it was like Al Cav on guitar, another friend of his on guitar, another friend of his on keyboards. And they actually had like a full band set up performing Soggy Potato Chips music. And I didn't see that coming. And I was surprised and impressed. I mean, it was like... You know, not to say that I didn't like him before. I've always been a fan of what Al Cav is doing and trying to support him as a, you know, up and comer in this funny music genre. But you know, it's like whoa! I didn't, that kind of caught me by surprise. And I'm like, whoa, that's really cool. So you know, and even Chris Mezzalesta, you know, got up on there for the song "Ninjas Wailing on Guitars" and so that he can wail on guitars like a ninja. So yeah, that was really, really cool. So
I caught from Facebook that was happening. So, but that's cool that Soggy Potato Chips stepped up their game.
Yes.
So
and
you
and
also
I,
caught.
I also caught a portion of Max DeGroote's concert. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to stick around for the whole thing, but I had other things I had to do. But what I saw, you know, once again, I had only seen him do a song or two at MarsCon, and getting to see him, like, do a set, you know, he's got some great lyrics, he's got some funny stuff, you know, he's still, he's not the kind of guy you expect to have, like, you know, dancing and choreography and, like, you know, explosions or whatever in a show, you know, but, you know, for someone who, as far as I can tell, is just starting off in this "I'm going to take my funny music, get on stage and perform it" thing. He's off to a really great start. Plus, he's got that you know, the song that was number one 2 months in a row on Dr. Demento, Census,
yes.
which he performed during the...
Great song.
The Fun For All, you know, great tune. And he had a lot of other great tunes I saw him do at his concert. So big thumbs up and kudos to Max DeGroote for that. And I won't get into describing everybody's show because I don't want to turn this into the MarsCon 45-minute recap. But.
Meanwhile, in Chicago, I went to the ER. And by the ER, I meant the ER.
Jeez,
like
Tasha
emergency room.
Oh, Tasha, poor Tasha. No.
And most of you probably know that, but some of you probably don't. So, basically, I was having pain that I believed to be kidney pain, and it had gotten worse, and I had taken a Vicodin, and the pain cut sharply right through that without even acknowledging the Vicodin's existence. So my husband picked me up from work and drove me to my hospital that my insurance covers me under, and I waited for a really long time, and then I finally got a room, and basically they did a shitload of blood tests. They did an ultrasound on my uterus, which was really annoying because I was trying to tell them the pain was in my kidneys, and they did a CAT scan of the whole area, and they didn't find dick wrong with me, so they sent me home. So, meanwhile,
Cirque du Soleil did a half-hour performance on Friday night, and I think we did pretty good, because we're still at the stage of how do you perform sketch comedy on stage when you don't have tons of sets and costumes and stuff? Do you do it like a radio play? Then there's the ambient music and the sound effects. How the hell are we going to do this thing? Especially since we can't get together and rehearse ever, because
right.
we live in four different parts of the country. So, given the situation, I think we did pretty good. We had Chris put the ambient music on his laptop, and we had me put the sound effects on my sampler,
yeah.
which we both had on stage so that we could trigger those things and have them go off. So, overall, it went well. One particular moment, those of you who remember Saturday Night Live during the season Billy Crystal was on, they used to do a bit where it was him and Christopher Guest being these two characters. I think their name were Willie and Frankie. But it was like, it was the I hate it when that happens, guys. It was like, hey, you ever, you know, I'm sitting there and I'm bored, you know, and I take this little statue of the Empire State Building and I stick it in my nose just to see how far in I could get it to go. So then I took one of those ball peen hammers. Yeah, that's right. And then I kept whacking the bottom of it, and then the point came out of the top of my head. I looked like that unicorn from the Ringing Brothers, Barnum and Bailey Sykes. Yeah, I looked like that. I hate it when that happens. Oh, I know what you mean, Willie. So whenever they would do that sketch, those two characters never looked at each other the whole time. And the reason they didn't is if either one of them looked at each other, they would just bust out laughing because of the ridiculous stuff they
yeah.
were doing. So I'm doing this sketch, and because we now have T-shirts that say "I want tile," it was like we got to do the tile sketches because the hardcore fan base is going to be there, and if we want to sell these shirts, we really should give the fans what they want. So we start doing the sketch, you know, and I'm like, "Welcome to the," I think I said Ritz-Carlton instead because that was what we originally wrote in the script, and I forgot to change it to the Seaside Hotel. I'm like, "Welcome to the Ritz-Carlton, can I help you?" And then Chris gets, like, whole right up in my face. You know, and I have to stand back with, you know, "Tile! I want tile!" And then he held that face, like, you know, and I'm like, "Excuse me, sir? Tile!" And I'm, like, reading from the script, and I'm like, well, you know, We don't really like the fact that we're reading from the scripts, and we want to try to evolve this to the point where we could do stuff without having to have scripts in our hands. So I'm thinking, all right, well, for the sake of acting, I better look over at him in character and address him directly. So I go, "Sir," and I turn my head and look, and there's Chris Mesteles, big old...
He broke
you.
You.
And I didn't like... completely lose it, but I had to stop, and I just was sitting there smiling and like silently laughing to myself, and everyone in the audience is laughing at me
yeah.
because I broke character, and he's still there with the face like unwavering. It was like, yes.
It's really saddening that I had to miss that.
I got most of it on video, so maybe some of it will end up on
that.
YouTube. So anyway, let's move on with more stuff. You showed up and everyone went, yay.
Well, basically, yeah, my eyes popped open at 10:30 in the morning, having slept less than 7 hours, and having been doped up on morphine, Vicodin, and, you know, stuff they give you for CAT scans, two different kinds of stuff, and some other kind of pill, and I'm like, I want to go to the con. I want to go to the con. I want to go to the con, and I want to go to the con. And I felt like ass on a stick. I mean, I felt crappy, and it was a really stupid, unadult, you know, like, retarded, dumb decision. And I was like, I want to go, I want to go, I want to go. So I got up and I got ready. And meanwhile, Josh is acting like even more of a sleepwalking zombie than I was. And I was not a very good wife that day because I wasn't really giving him a choice. I was just like, come on, get ready, let's go. and he was too, like, completely wiped out and exhausted to bother to argue with me about it. So, lo and behold, we are in a car, and Josh having not spoken, like, barely 20 words to me all day, and we were on our way to PangoCon, and the premiere of the video podcast kept getting pushed to later and later times in the con because I was very insistent that I wanted to be there for the premiere of that, and that was the biggest motivator that was going to get me to go to part of the con, to drive over 300 miles so that I could go to part of the con. So while we were driving,
I did a concert and it went well. I actually got some pretty decent compliments from people after the con, you know, like after my show, they were like, you know, just saying that I did a really good job. And oh, here's a thing. I spent pretty much all my time driving there rehearsing songs that I've been performing but haven't had, like, memorized. I've been using lyric sheets. So it's like, you know, I finally got to, I'm like, I'm gonna practice these songs over and over again so that I can do them on stage. First of all, I was practicing The Geeks Come Out at Night and Platform Wars because I knew Diva wanted me to perform them with him, and I knew that he wanted to shoot a music video for Platform Wars. So I'm like, okay, I really gotta buckle down and get this memorized. So I did both of those. I did My Parents Bought Me a Television, God Bless Stephen Colbert, which I ended up not performing that weekend, but oh well. Same for the Dada Slide.
Aww.
There wasn't enough room on stage because all the Toy Boat's gear was on stage for their concert, which was following mine. So it was like, okay, no Dada Slide. And there were others whose names I'm forgetting. Hanna-Barbera Polka, that was one. So yeah, I basically, you know, put on my big boy pants and memorize some shit.
Yeah, cool.
So things went well. And then, yeah, the Funk for All concert was really awesome.
And this is the point at which I showed up and people, like, cheered for me wildly and chanted and that was really overwhelmingly cool. And I found out, like, all kinds of people have been asking about me before that point, including people that I didn't know who knew who I was. You know, like, you know, dementia, you know, Fumpers and Filkers had been asking about me, so, you know, to those of you who are worried about me, thank you. You guys really touched my heart that weekend. So there I was, and so now I was part of the con too.
And the Fump for All show went great. Me and Ian, we did not plan this nor discuss it ahead of time. But,
I know.
But
I could tell.
When Ian got up to do his thing, I forgot exactly what the verbal lead-in was, but when it went to, like, he, you know, him talking about himself, it's like, oh, well, go to my website, is The Great Luke Ski. he did, like, some great verbal, it's like, oh, The Great Luke Ski at, you know, greatlukeski.com for all your Luke Ski information, go to blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, like, so rather than having a Luke Ski moment, he actually was plugging your stuff instead of his.
And then I got up and walked over to him and got out my wallet and handed him a dollar.
No, you handed him a $5.
Or I was going to hand him a $5, and I'm like, no, I'm not going to give you a $5. Here's $1. And then I went back and sat down again.
And it was comedically brilliant, and everybody, you know, was laughing their ass off.
And then later on in the show, he mentioned briefly lukeski.com again, and then I went over to him again and gave him another dollar.
Later he was like, here's your change, and he brings you over a quarter.
A nickel.
A nickel.
A nickel.
As far as what you and I did in that, the first thing either of us did was the video premiere,
which went over huge. I thought everyone just completely seemed to love it. As far as I could tell.
And it was at that moment when I was like, okay, all of this, you know, being here and feeling like shit and not, I shouldn't be here and I dragged my husband here and we wasted gas and we wasted money and it was like so totally worth it. Just to see everybody, like, laughing their asses off, and Bill and Moonbeam right in the front row.
Yeah, because in case we didn't mention this yet, I think I did, like, they challenged us by doing their video podcast at the end, like, you know, like, something to the effect of, like, oh, what could you possibly do to top our, you know,
like,
awesome...
The Luke and Carrie heads were like, what can we do to top that? Yeah, you know, without giving away the joke entirely, but,
Yeah, and so basically, when the thing ended... And, you know, Carrie and I stood up, and everyone was, like, cheering like crazy, and Bill and Moomy were right there in the front room, and we just kind of both walked up to him, and I kind of did, like, one of those kind of wrestler moves, like, hands out, and then the pelvic thrust, like, geez, you know, like, yeah! You know?
And then the crowd started chanting, fight, 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 fight! Which, and I'm like, I'll fight you even though you're pregnant, Moonbeam!
So, yeah. But, we have to save it for the next episode because I don't want to give away the joke, but Bill's reaction to the ending of the podcast is so
hilarious.
Priceless. I can't wait to talk about it.
Yeah. And we will talk about it next week. Unlike the weekend with Cirque du Soleil that happened in January that you still haven't talked about.
Well, maybe sometime in the near future I'll be recording an episode of Bad Rapport with a special Cirque du Soleil guest. And that would be an ideal time to discuss it.
Okay, then. So... Then after that, I performed, since Rob Balder wasn't there, I performed a Bald Box song with Shoebox. We did my favorite Bald Box song, USFNA, so that was a lot of fun. And Luke performed Everybody Get Lost, and he had a special ending to that. He Rickrolled the audience.
You know what? I had that idea back when I was first recording that song. And I just, like, I don't know, somehow I never thought to make the effort to work it in until this time. I'm like, oh, I don't, you know, I only have so much time for my main show, I want to do this and that.
And plus, there's no reason why not, because you can actually just sample it rather than, you know, trying to go through the effort of having different music there made for you. So
that was cool.
And then the second to the last song we sang, we covered First of May by Jonathan Coulton as a big group. All the Fumpers. And
because it was indeed the 1st of May.
Yes, and we ended it with, by request of Tom Smith, I think, we ended it with my song, The World is Made Of, and so we did that as like a group sing-along on the chorus, or at least the Fumpers sang along on the chorus, and anyone in the audience who knew it. So that was pretty nifty. That was probably the niftiest performance of that song overall. And as far as my experience of PangoCon Saturday, well, I watched Power Salad, had dinner, felt like complete shit, and went straight to my room and, you know, tried to go to sleep after that. After having a low blood sugar episode, I actually eventually did sleep. So I literally didn't see any of the parties. The only party I saw all PangoCon was the Roman party, which was some people dressed in Roman costumes with a little, like, Colosseum on wheels so that they were both Roman, R-O-M-A-N, and Roman, R-O-A-M-I-N, apostrophe.
Yeah. I was there for the recording of Bill's 10th anniversary episode of Toad Elevating Moment. They, because of the crappiness of the computer connections, they weren't able to shoutcast it live, but
yeah.
I was there for the recording of it so that I could, you know, show my support for Bill and the Toad.
Yeah, I wanted to be there.
And then I played a little bit of Rock Band, and then Devo said he needed me to get all geared up. Oh, that was the other thing. As I said, Devo wanted to film a video for the song Platform Wars, in which I play the John Hodgman PC character from the Apple commercials. I had put together a special outfit, a suit and tie and pants and everything.
And you forgot it.
And I left them at home. I got them all prepped. I hung them in the closet over by the door, and then I forgot to take them with me. So I had to ask Bill Putt to lend me a suit of his, which wasn't quite as accurate, but at least it was a suit, you know, as opposed to just me and my regular
clothes.
Wasn't
it, like, big, a little big on you?
Oh, yeah, it was definitely big on me, but at least I can wear it in a way that it didn't, you know, seem like that was the comic intent of it, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he had like two. He gave me two jackets, and one of them was like super huge.
I don't know.
Like,
are we supposed to talk about that video here, or is that video a surprise?
I don't know.
Maybe you should. You find out later, and if it's a surprise, then you'll have to edit this out.
During the next song break, I'll call Devo and find out.
Okay.
All right.
So then sleep happened, and then I, thanks to the awesomeness of the music track director Jay Kitty, got to do a 10 a.m. concert on Sunday, even though I was supposed to be there for my 2 p.m. concert on Saturday, and didn't make it because I was at the ER till 3 in the morning in Chicago. So I showed up a couple minutes late for my own 10 a.m. concert, and there was already like over 20 people in the room, and I was shocked by how many people made it there at 10 a.m. on a freaking Sunday at a con.
At one point I counted and there were 37 people in the room, which was pretty close to full.
I mean, again, you guys that were at PanguCon, you guys absolutely blew my mind and really touched my heart and really made me feel good and loved. And, you know, on a personal note, until dementia, I've never really felt as accepted and loved and, you know, popular in any other area in my entire life. I never have. You know, I wasn't really that popular in Rocky Horror, and prior to that, I was definitely not popular in college, and I was not popular in high school, and I was not popular in middle school. And, you know, this experience of being in the dementia community is really... You know, I mean, you guys got me. I'm a lifer. I'm in it for life. I'm gonna
DWO dementia for life.
There may be times when I get a little burnt out on comedy music, either recording it or listening to it, but I'll keep doing it, and I'll keep being friends with you guys because you guys are my family. And I'm getting a little verklempt. So
talk amongst yourselves. Here's a topic. Worm Quartet is neither a worm nor a quartet. Discuss.
And basically, you know, the 10 a.m. concert went about 10 or 20 times better than I ever imagined because A, I hadn't really rehearsed that much, and B, I was exhausted and wiped out and underfed and undercaffeined, and C, I didn't think anyone would be there, and there was tons of people there. So that was amazing.
And you sold albums.
I did. I sold 9 times as many CDs as I did at MarsCon. So then we saw the Insane Ian concert, and Insane Ian has some cool new songs.
Yes, he had originally meant to have a new album out at PanguCon, but he had kidney stones, and that threw a monkey wrench into it. But
yeah,
the new album I'm sure will be awesome. He has a new boy band style parody that will be available at the Fump Sideshow by the time our next episode airs. So we're going to play that song probably in the next episode.
Yes, so it'll be our third Insane Ian song spinning on our, what will be our 15th episode. By the way, this is our 14th episode. Welcome.
Hi.
We need to remember to say the episode numbers at the beginning. It would help if you put the correct episode number on the outline.
Yeah, that would make sense.
After Ian was... What was next in the chronology? Dual Core?
Yeah, Dual Core. Int 80 is talented with the freestyling. And, you know, Nerd... It's like... I'm not saying he isn't funny, but he isn't... a dementia act in the sense of he is trying to be funny with every lyric he says or everything he does. He's just into hip-hop, and he's, you know, into nerdy stuff, so he does nerdcore hip-hop.
So he's kind of like, you know, sort of like Beth Kinderman in that he kind of got in with our group without technically being a dementia artist.
He does have
has some funny songs.
He has some funny songs. He has a song about Aqua Teen Hunger Force called Too Wicked, which is all about Carl.
Yeah,
he's sort of
nerdcore, though. I mean, he did have definitely some nerdcore.
Well, yeah, he's fully nerdcore. He's 100% nerdcore. Okay. It's just...
Well, I mean, I didn't understand all his lyrics, so I know you're going to try to get me some of his recordings so I can try to get into that, since he encourages getting dual core recordings by any means possible, including theft. So
yeah, that's part of the nerdcore philosophy. It's basically like, you know, like, oh, you know, go ahead and, you know, like some of the guys at Nerdapalooza last year, I was just like, oh, hey, can I pick up your album? And, you know, or where's your CD I can buy? He's like, I'll just take it off the internet. You know, it's like they seriously don't give a crap about making money off of selling
their
music.
Yeah, positive attitudes like that in a big way, even though I consider them more dementia than nerd.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But speaking of positive attitude, they were next on stage, and they were rocking it and kicking it and making the audience laugh their asses off. And there's one point in particular where they're singing their big Hey Girl, Shake Your Big Booty song. And the apocalypse cow, person in a cow costume with a t-shirt that says apocalypse cow walks in at just that moment. And I was already shaking my booty, so I started shaking my booty like at the apocalypse cow, like as if I was sexy dancing. And I totally stole the show, and everybody was laughing their asses off. It was awesome. And after that, a big group of people went out to eat, and if you were there and you didn't get invited, don't feel like you were being excluded. It was just kind of like, it started out with me, Josh, and Bill, and then we just kind of added people on from there. And I know there was some of our friends that weren't there and probably didn't even know about it, and it wasn't intentional.
Yeah, at cons it just happens.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know... you know, it's like, sometimes, you know, like, I'll go to eat, or it'll be just me and Sarah, and I'll be like, all right, let's just go get some food and not tell anybody we're going, because we just want to go out there and eat and get back to the con.
Well, this was not that.
But then sometimes it's like, all right, everyone, we're going to go eat. Who wants to come with us? And then whoever's the sound of our voice,
in the lobby or whatever.
You know, so it's, because, you know, sometimes it's like, okay, we have this window of time to eat, so anyone who wants to come immediately now... come.
I mean, literally, me and Josh were the first ones to actually walk in the restaurant to get the tables, and we said 13 people, and it ended up being about twice that, because people just kept, you know, calling or texting, and then Matt brought the entire Chicago sci-fi fandom group. I can't remember their exact name, but, so, you know.
It's speculative fiction now. Because we're all hoity-toity with pinky fingers in the air. The Chicago Speculative Fiction Group!
It's
sci-fi, bitches. Anyway.
Luke was smiling during that, because I think he's trying to make a joke, not be a dick.
It's just like, I remember, in fact, this happened at PenguinCon, where I found out that, like, it's, like, certain members of the fandom community consider the term sci-fi to be like a dirty word, because at one point in the past Harlan Ellison said, you know, sci-fi was a word invented by Hollywood just to sell things and make money and blah,
well,
blah, 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 blah.
If
you're a real true fan of this, you need to call it SF, not sci-fi. And that's why there's all these panels you'll see, it's, you know, humor in SF,
but
female characters in SF, history of SF, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, because, like, if I call it sci-fi, what, that makes me a shitty fan? That means, like, you know...
I think you're being just as stuck up as they are. Because you're like, you must call it sci-fi. And they're like, you must call it SF. And I'm all like, call it whatever the fuck you want. I don't give a flying fuck.
Well, if they want to call it SF, that's fine. It's just like, you know... Well, then it's like, the third step is people kind of realize, well, calling it sci-fi or SF excludes, like, Lord of the Rings and excludes Harry Potter and excludes lots of other things in fandom. So suddenly it's like, oh, SF, we don't mean sci-fi, we mean speculative fiction.
I always called it, like, when I would go to convention, if I wanted to get down to the nitty-gritty, I'd call it sci-fi fantasy.
Yeah, sci-fi slash fantasy. That's, you know.
Whatever.
Anyway.
So did you want to talk about this bullet point?
Ribbons are dumb. Okay, next.
Why are ribbons dumb? I like ribbons.
Okay, here's the ribbons thing has gone crazy.
First of all, tell them what the ribbons thing is. I know we've mentioned it, but just in case.
You get a badge for a convention that you have to wear so that you can walk around and be like, hi, I'm a part of this convention, here's my name, here's my badge. So
at Michigan conventions.
At many other conventions, you can get these ribbons that you attach to the bottom that help denote what type of guest you are, or, you know, the fact that you're participating in the masquerade or something. So, you know, at Michigan conventions, they got the idea a long time ago to make different types of wacky themed ribbons, and it just grew and grew and grew and grew to the point where there are now literally hundreds of different ribbons at every con. and people basically, it's like Pokemon. Everyone has to get every ribbon, or certain people are like, they have to get every ribbon to the point where their badge literally hangs all the way down to the floor with all the ribbons that are on them, and in fact, so much so they need to get, like, tape to put on the back to reinforce it so they don't all fall off. Now, it's other people doing that, I don't care about. Here's the part that's starting to annoy me is this. Is like, if I'm walking around and I have my badge and it has on it, you know, music track performer, and then under that it says, you know, the I Want Tile, you know, ribbons that were made to go with the whole Cirque du Soleil thing. And then, you know, just things that have to do with me or what I'm there to do or whatever. But
people thrust other ribbons at you?
People that like, it's like, oh, hi, here, take these three ribbons. This literally happened to me. Someone's like, take these three ribbons. And I looked at them and I don't remember what they said, but I didn't understand any of them. They were just weird words or acronyms or just like jokes I didn't get. And I'm just like, I like handed them back. And like the guy looked at me as if like I was,
you just slapped him in the face.
I just drank his milkshake. I just, took off.
Why
didn't
you just take him? You could have given him to me.
Well, yeah, but it's just the fact that they've created this news. It's like on Facebook. It's like somebody's giving you a friend request, and if you deny it because you literally don't know who the person is, then that makes you an asshole.
Well,
with
ribbons, you can just take them and give them to someone else. Someone wants them.
A person who I care about and who is a friend of mine, I actually had to say to her face, I don't care about those ribbons. Like, to finally have that person understand, stop trying to give them to me.
You wore my ribbons.
I care about your ribbons. Your ribbons is part of my fandom.
For the record, I had three ribbons. They were pink. The text was supposed to be rainbow colored, but it was more of a silvery with a slightly iridescent tint to it. One of them said tile in all caps. One of them said Caritastic approved. And I didn't give that to just anyone. And the other one said, I saw Carrie Dalby's concert, which I thought I had 50 of them, but I either didn't have 50 of them or I had more than 50 people because I ran out of them at my concert.
So those of you who are listening who are on the PenguinCon staff or involved with that whole creating the ribbons, because I always get the email messages saying, get your ribbon things in. I want somebody to make a ribbon that says, I don't collect ribbons.
So, make the ribbon yourself, damn it.
Well, people, it's...
I enjoy collecting ribbons because they're multicolored, and I like things that are multicolored, and it's just like, it's a fun side distraction. It's funny to see people wearing entire vests or shirts made out of ribbons or...
I think that's cool.
Whatever. I mean, and I don't really care what they say. I'll take any ribbon that I can get my hands on.
It's just, I don't know.
Because that's how most people at Michigan cons are, so just deal with it.
It just sucks that I'm being put in a situation that's making me look like a jerk if I say, oh, well, your ribbon has nothing to do with what I'm interested in.
I see you have pockets on your pants, so you could just say, thank you, and then walk away, put them in your pockets, and give them to someone else.
But sometimes they stand there and stare at you, and because I have done that. I have put them in my pocket and not added to my thing, and they'll look at you like, why didn't he put it on his badge right now,
Well, that can just be your usual thing you do anyways. I just wanted to thank Ken. I know he's probably not listening, but Ken collected a bunch of ribbons for me. I wasn't there until Saturday at 7, and then even when I got there, I ended up going to bed. So Ken-tastic, awesome, super Ken madman collected a bunch of ribbons for me to make me happier. And the first one, the very first one I put right underneath my badge said, ha ha, your convention is ruined, which I thought was appropriate.
Cool. Well,
let's move on to playing a song.
Yeah, this is the first new song from Worm Quartet posted at the Fump in about a year. So, dang it, we're going to play it, and it's awesome. So here is Worm Quartet. You can download this for free at thefump.com right now. Go get it.
Something befuddling, it was extreme knitting on ESPN. And when we started some caressing and segued into molesting. I suggested we should go upstairs right then. But she said there's just one hurdle, you're firm into them further. You remember when the sun was born? I was top of my halo from you, a wearing a fly Trojan's but I still wound up a hurling in the morn. I crumbled and I pleaded for 'twas loving that I needed. If no self-induced relief, it would suffice. But she wouldn't give me one kiss in my heaven must stay for my sin. Until it's not an angel, let's play nice. I said that's all when I need all, but till that's my albedo. It's still in the game, true magnetic north. She said, better put some my son. I won't look at that thing twice until you set up on the plan that I'll lay forth. I got no clothes to roam. And if the ring upon my finger doesn't ruin you, my love, then the scarf on my nuts should drive it home. Drive it home, the scarf on my nuts should drive it home. Well, with that, my fate was written. I was in his office sitting with some nervous man through with things crossed over their parts. The whole room was decorated with a look that could be dated to an album, was still burning off the charts. The patient just before me came along.
Thank you. Well, 2 years have come and gone now since that morning when the doctor did to me the thing he did. And just yesterday in my pride looked to me all twinkly-eyed and said, darling, maybe we should have another kid. And I said, I swear to you, my lover, that my heart longs for no other. And up from your side, I've had no cause to roam. But if I start on my guts, starting from you, my love, you can get your glass from out my home. Out my home, you can get your glass from out my home.
Ow.
And now it's time for...
By Devo Spices at DevoSpice.com, compiled by roving reporter Carrie Whitney, and submitted by fans like you.
Word.
I guess it's stupid to prove it innocent, cause it makes it so damn easy to incriminate.
Penny Williams of Elizabethton said she was in the rear of her residence shortly before 6 p.m. when she heard someone enter the front door. When she went to check, she found Michael Gordon Vest, age 36, who was not known to her, standing in her living room, wearing a pair of her boots and a pair of her glasses, holding a small houseplant, and reading from Williams's antique Bible. Williams ordered the man to leave, but he began to come further into the house. She retreated toward the rear of the house, and Vest went outside. When he got outside, he attempted to plant several potted plants in the ground. Vest was taken into custody by sheriff's deputies shortly after that and taken to Sycamore Shoals Hospital for an evaluation and then taken to the Carter County Jail. What Vest's overall motives were for his behavior are unclear. Perhaps he needed to refer to the Bible to get a reminder about that whole thou shalt not steal thing. However, it is possible Vest is a gardener from another part of the country looking for work in Elizabethton, making him a transplant.
The police deputies of Tampa, Florida have decided to use criminals' own stupidity against them as a means of capturing them. Officers mailed letters to a list of known fugitives, offering the fugitives over $650 in free government stimulus money. They were told to call a storefront office set up by the police to confirm their appointments and pick up their checks. Over 34 of them did and were arrested by officers waiting in a back room. The felony fugitives, who were wanted on everything from drugs to armed robbery charges, were living proof in shackles and handcuffs that if a deal sounds like it's too good to be true, it likely is, said one officer. A female we arrested still wanted to know if she could get her money. Authorities say the operation actually saved taxpayer money since the fugitives came to the police instead of the other way around.
In Canada, a Saskatchewan credit union released a video of a suspect dressed all in black and carrying a curved sword who smashed his way in on April 13th. The video, from the Synergy Credit Union in Lashburn, shows the suspect poking at a banking machine with a sword before smashing his way through a glass door and into the closed credit union. The suspect was seen skulking around and jumping over the counters until he left empty-handed. Then the wannabe robber smashed his way through another door and left the building moments later. The RCMP said the suspect cut himself on one of the glass doors he smashed, even though the door was actually unlocked. What none of them realized is this was just a promotional stunt to make the public aware of a new kids' cartoon action show. Clumsy thieving ninja hosers, clumsy thieving ninja hosers, clumsy thieving ninja hosers, heroes eating back bacon, take off!
And finally, in Bangor, Maine, 58-year-old Glenn Watson is back behind bars after 1 week after completing a 15-month jail sentence for cocaine trafficking, after leading police on a car chase, then a brief foot chase. According to police, as the foot chase began, Glenn seemed to be holding up his pants, which appeared to be undone. The chase ended when Glenn's pants, quote, fell completely down around his ankles, causing him to fall down the steps and onto the ground, unquote. Here we have some audio of the foot pursuit. Well, police seized more than 2 ounces of cocaine valued at nearly $7,000 from Glenn Watson, who has been charged with aggravated trafficking in cocaine, driving to endanger, eluding a police officer, and 3 stop sign and red light violations. No reports of any injuries to groups of scantily clad women, men in gorilla suits, old bald British police officers, or women in raincoats riding tricycles. People are stupid, and once again, they have proven it. This has been News of the Stupid.
Walnuttos.
I hope I pronounced that Maine town name right, Bangor.
Bangor, yes. Bangor, Maine. You haven't heard of Bangor, Maine?
Well, I actually really eat, like, really East Coast ignorant, in all honesty. It's kind of pathetic.
Something that has been tripping me up for years is that Boston is north of New York.
Yeah, me
it's
too.
Like, I always think of Boston.
But it hasn't
being
been
south
tripping
of
me
New-
up for years. It's been tripping me up for like a week when I looked at my big map of the U.S. that Josh gave me as a wedding present, and I was looking at that because there's a chance we might end up going to Boston for his new job, or well, he'll probably be going, and I'm hoping to go with him. And I was looking at that, and I was like, I always thought that Boston was south of New York City. So.
Yeah, it's just something you never thought about logically, because I know that New Jersey is directly below New York, and that Massachusetts, you know, is not. But for some reason, I always thought of, like, Boston being south of New York. I don't know.
Me too. Weird. There must be some, like, cultural reason for that. Anyways, so we've got song origins time. We don't have any Luke Ski song origins because nobody has requested any. So, screw you guys. Or you could request some. I'm going to just... There's 3 more on the list of ones I need to hit. For the sake of time, I'm just going to do 1 today. I believe Blasted Bill Putt of Moonbeam and Bill's Pot of Destiny. I'm just making this longer and longer and longer. He requested that I talk about the origin of Hazy Shade of Killer. Well, there's not really that much to it. Basically, I really enjoy the Bangles version of the Simon Garfunkel song Hazy Shade of Winter, and I thought it would be really fun to parody so that I could have a chance to sing all those harmonies by my lonesome. And if I recall correctly, and I'm not sure if I do because I have a really bad memory, but if I recall correctly, I was already paying Jared Ringel to make the instrumental before I even knew exactly what it was going to be, which is, I don't think it's not the first
That's
time
bold.
I've done that. Well, it's not the first time I've done that. Actually, Sleepwalking Zombies, which I think you and I can agree is one of my best songs,
mm-hmm.
Also was the exact same situation, or that was definitely, I was, Jared Ringel was already making the instrumental,
yeah,
and I hadn't.
I remember you contacted me wanting help creating the music because you're trying to make it yourself, and you were saying, like,
yeah, you
well,
could,
what, you know, what about, could you just do the beat or something? And I'm like, well, let me ask Jared for a little help, and then Jared basically kind of said, well, why don't I just do the whole thing?
Yeah,
and
thank God for that. Thank God for that.
And it came out super awesome, and it,
yeah,
really kicks ass.
He stepped up at the last minute because I was working on a FUMP deadline there, and Jared Ringel stepped up at, like, the very last second and helped me make that a kick-ass song. But that's another song origin for another day. Hazy Shade of Killer. So something funny about that song was that I was so determined to get all of the vocals right and that I sat there with this program finale notepad or something, getting it all on sheet music beforehand, like, and it took, like, painstakingly long number of hours, and I'd actually done it a while before I actually made this recording, but I decided to make this song and make it about heroes, which at the time I was still watching and into, and I decided, you know, Luke's song about heroes was basically about season 1 of Heroes, so I made my song about the shortened season 2 of Heroes, and it isn't really a comedy song, but that was kind of intentional because I was inspired by the possible Oscar song, their song about Serenity that's a parody of David Bowie, you know, since I have a...
Aim to Misbehave.
There you go. I have a bad memory, you know, combined with exhaustion right now, so... So it's kind of inspired by that, where it's more like I wanted it to be this like cool fandom song rather than really a comedy song. But I put it on the Fump anyways. And I've only performed it once, and it wasn't even with an actual performance track. It was with it was just with the actual recording. The response was pretty underwhelming. I ended up like, it was kind of pathetic. I was kind of like begging my friends to go make comments on the Fump because the like it had like 3 comments or whatever, and I was like so saddened by that. And I felt pretty strong that the number of comments, you know, the fewer comments a song had, the less likely someone would be to click on it and listen to it unless they were one of the people that listens to everything. So yeah, that the whole, you know, I don't even know when the last time I even listened to it was. I mean, the response was pretty underwhelming, but you know, I enjoyed making it.
Did that song come out before season 2 of Heroes premiered, or after?
After it was over, but before season 3 premiered.
Oh yeah, okay, I remember now. So basically, it's like, I know I've said something like this before. I don't remember if it was on this podcast or if I was just talking to somebody, but it's basically kind of like, oh, I remember what it was, having to do with like the top 50, the Lukeski top 50, when that happened a few months ago when I, you know, redid it for the new album, how I felt that Holding Out for Hero placed much farther down the list than it should have. I think Holding Out for Hero is one of the best songs I've ever done. It still holds up to me. Every time I hear that song, I'm like, wow, this kicks ass. Did I write this? Did the awesomeness of Jared Ringgold and Shoebox and Carrie Dolby just manifest itself in a ball of wonderment and wind and just, you know, plop itself onto the Fump without me having anything to do with it or what? Because that's just an awesome thing.
That's another song, you know, where like Jared Ringgold really fucking saved the day, because...
And as long as we're sucking on the theoretical pole of Jared Ringgold, who deserves it, he's working on some music for me now. So so the next Fump track I post will have background music by Jared. So look forward
instrumental.
To that.
Call it instrumental, not background.
Oh, yes. Instrumental.
But, no, he really saved the day on Holding Out for Hero, because I recorded all the, you know, backing vocals on that just fine, and, you know, those came out fine. And then I had to record the lead vocals, and I sounded like a dying cat. I mean, some of my lead vocals sound so incredibly shitty, and I'm not just saying that. I'm like, I really, really, really mean it. So Luke went in and he recorded himself singing the lead vocals just in case. And then it was Jared's brilliant idea to, he like threw Luke in on lead vocals during the high part when I was like killing myself to try to hit the notes and sounded like horse shit. And so he put Luke in as the lead vocal during that part and left me in as the lead vocal during the less high parts, and plus did some other kind of mojo on it to make it sound less strained. I don't know what the hell he did.
I think it was my idea to have me be the lead vocal.
Was it your idea?
For the bridge part.
I don't know, but
he whooped it in the ass.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing. I think it all sounds incredible. And so anyway, the overall point, the reason I brought it up is because, like, you know, it was super huge, and it was hit on Dr. D, and everyone in the Fump loved it, and it's got, like, one of my most commented songs ever. It's, like, got, like, 30 or more comments on it. But, you know, fast forward to just this past time I did the top 50, and it was way farther down on the list, and it's basically, I think, because Hero Season 1, it was hot, everyone loved it.
Yeah.
Then Hero Season 2, you know, flopped.
Like,
you know, it had half a season that flopped, and then went into the fucking writer's strike.
And now I don't even watch Heroes anymore.
Yeah, and then basically it was like you were doing the season 2 leading into season 3 Heroes song, and because Heroes wasn't as hot anymore, people didn't care as much about your song because, oh, it's about Heroes, that isn't so great, because, you know, God forbid anybody in fandom actually be devoted to the shit that they supposedly like.
Oh,
you know.
Shut the fuck up. I don't even... I mean, I admit, I don't watch it anymore, but I don't really watch anything. I mean, you know, it just... I wouldn't say it jumped the shark, but I just... It didn't, like, hold me to the point where I could, you know, find it within my busy schedule to still keep watching it. So now we're moving on to Things Only Luke Remembers. Duh, duh, duh. Insert theme song here.
The puppet, like, those of you who have my DVD, I have a monkey puppet that is known nowadays as Apostrophe Monkey. He's gone through some name changes in the time. Actually, it's a standard monkey puppet the kind that has been around for decades. The one I'm currently using is very similar to the one I got when I was a kid. It just kind of got to the point where it's like, once I found this new version, I bought it at a theme park kiosk or something, and then I kind of retired the original one because it was just so old and I didn't want it to completely deteriorate. But it's the standard kind of monkey puppet that you put on your arm, and then it has long arms and feet that you kind of hook it around you to make it look like the monkey is hanging onto you, and you just have like a monkey hanging onto you, and blah, 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 blah. So when I was a kid, about the time I got this monkey puppet as a gift, there was a sitcom on, I think it was NBC, and it was, I believe, maybe one of those midsummer replacement sitcoms, you know, where they're basically trying stuff out for a handful of episodes. It was a sitcom called Mr. Smith. Mr. Smith was a talking orangutan. It was a live-action show, and it was actually, like, filmed, like not like a sitcom style with video cameras. They actually used film cameras to film this sitcom about a talking orangutan that basically, through some kind of magical scientific experiment, you know, in a lab, was super intelligent. So basically, the orangutan wore a suit and, like, had a job in Washington or something in an office. And it was, like, one of those things where, you know, they just have, like, some trainer off camera doing some hand signal, you know, like, you know, come on, Jim Jim, do the mouth thing. And then the monkey just moves its mouth, like, nom, 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 nom. And then, you know, like Mr. Ed, and then they, like, edit the voice in later.
Yeah.
So it was a sitcom about a talking orangutan named Mr. Smith, who was hyper-intelligent and wore a suit and worked in Washington or did some shit like that. So because of that, when I got this monkey puppet, I originally named the monkey puppet Mr. Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And it retained that name for a very long time. And it was one of those situations, kind of like Linus with the security blanket, where, like, somebody has, like, a teddy bear, and it's a kid. The kid takes the teddy bear everywhere because the teddy bear is, like, his best friend in the world.
Yeah.
That was kind of what was going on with me and that monkey puppet for a long time, the original one. during the Ray TV years, what was the name? Okay, during the Ray TV years, the monkey went under a severely offensive transformation, because we had this sketch, a puppet show sketch, where Trisha was playing a kitty cat, a really cute teeny tiny kitty cat. It was called It's the Wonder Dog Kitty. I'm doing a cute little kid show. It was a cute little kitty cat puppet. And then these two monkeys come in. The other one was named originally named Mumford, after the rare George Lucas movie Twice Upon a Time had a character named Mumford, and we thought that was so funny.
Yeah.
And so we named the monkey Mumford. We wanted to name our dog Mumford, and our dad refused to let us name the dog Mumford. The dog's name is Top. Top, yeah, short for Top Sergeant.
Oh God.
Thanks, Dad.
It's a little glimpse into Luke's childhood.
Well, and it was Michael's dog. At the very least, Michael should have had the naming rights on the dog.
Yeah.
You know. But once again, you know, it was Michael's dog, but Michael was too young to take care of it, so I was the one primarily taking care of the dog. But
yeah.
None of us kids got to come up with a name for
you
the dog.
You guys missed some air quotes around Michael's dog.
Yeah, so I believe, so the idea was that the monkeys were coming in and taking it over in kind of a Black Panther sort of way. Like they knew their pushover neighbor, the cat, had a show, so they just kind of barge into her show all the time to put forth their agendas about how the man is keeping them down. So during that era, the monkey's name changed to Ahmad Shazmin Khan Chibala Chibala Chibala.
Oh, yeah.
And Mumford's full name was, at that point, became Mumford Shaquille Algonquin III.
I've heard all of these in your, like, old ass recordings.
Yeah, so, and Algonquin came from Algonquin Road, which is in this area, because we used to go to Woodfield Mall all the time back in those days. Then later, the same puppet, we put, the same monkey puppet that I've been talking about, we put little round mirrored sunglasses on it, and then it became a new persona of Apostrophe Monkey, who was like an agent for Bertsy, Bobby, and Dusty of I Kissed a Squirrel fame.
Yeah.
And then later on, I just turned it into the whole, you know, kind of dropped all that and got the British accent, and it became, you know, Apostrophe Monkey as if he's some kind of, you know, hoity-toity Masterpiece Theater type of person.
Did anyone watch Ray TV other than those of you that were in it?
When I had my fanzine back in the day, I actually made... Actually, I'll get them out right now.
Luke gets
visual
a thing.
Visual aids on an audio podcast. Isn't
Luke
that
gets
great?
A thing. This is the song where Luke gets a thing. Luke gets
I'm all
a thing.
Happy because the room I record this podcast in is finally organized and shit. So I actually made these compilation ones. Yeah, the Ray TV anthologies, volumes 1, 2, 3, and 4. So it was 4 VHS tapes. Each was about 6 hours. And so basically encapsulating all of Ray TV into 4 VHS tapes pretty much. And then I had 2 even more encapsulated versions. One was called Camera On Me. The other one was called No Scripts Whatsoever. And I sold these VHS tapes through my fanzine, and some people did buy them.
Okay.
Eric Hoag, I know, bought them, and some of the...
But it wasn't on, like, cable access or anything?
We did the 11th episode of Ray TV. We wanted to try an experiment because we did it as... we did it as... Ray TV normally was just a bunch of disjointed sketches. We wanted to try if we could do something that had like a continuous plot line. So we tried it. We basically made it into an origin story of Ray TV. We called it Ray TV Movie, and it was just under an hour long. Sorry.
Hit.
Yeah. Ray actually got that aired on public access TV up in the Twin Cities.
Cool.
I don't know how many times it aired. At least a handful of times. So anyway,
back to
yeah.
the monkey.
So yeah. Anyway, the whole point of this, I mean, we kind of segued into making this more about Ray TV and the monkey than about the sitcom, because the whole point of this was to be things only Luke remembers, and I'm talking about the Mr. Smith orangutan sitcom. Did anyone actually watch that? I remember spending the night at my grandmother's house.
Never heard of it.
And watching it on TV. It came out about the same time. Have you heard of a show called Manimal?
No.
About a man who transformed into different animals, and that was his superpower?
No.
Yeah, it was about the same time as Manimal is when that show came out. And that was also NBC.
All right, so this Natalie Portman Lonely Island song, I just played this Lonely Island album for Josh for the first time on the drive back from PangoCon yesterday, and he had never heard the Natalie Portman rap, and he fucking made me play it again immediately after that, which is the first time since I've known him that he ever wanted to hear a song twice in a row.
That's cool.
Ever. And then pretty soon I figured out that he thought it was really hot and sexy, so hopefully you will think this is hot and sexy.
And as a segue,
that was a segue.
Well, no, because there was another reason you wanted to play a song from Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yes. I think it's neato that Betty White is going to be hosting Saturday Night Live this Saturday because of Facebook. And I'm going to hopefully actually DVR that and hopefully actually watch it, because that's just how neato I think it is, even though I never watch anything.
All right, so here is The Lonely Island with Natalie Portman doing Natalie's rap.
And in 3, 2...
We're sitting here today with film star Natalie Portman.
Hello.
So, Natalie, what's a day in the life of Natalie Portman like?
Do you really want to know?
Please, tell us.
I don't sleep, motherfucker, off that yak and that Durbin. Doing 120, getting head while I'm swerving.
Damn, Natalie, you a crazy chick.
Yo, shut the fuck up and suck my dick. I'm buzzing dudes' mouths like gushers, motherfucker. Roll up on NBC and smack the shit out of Jeff Zucker.
What you want, Natalie?
To drink and fight.
What you need, Natalie?
To fuck all night. Don't text me when I'm crazy off that airplane glue. Put my foot down your throat till your shit's in my shoe. Leave you screaming. Pay for my dry cleaning. Fuck you, man. It's my name that he's screaming.
I'm sorry, Natalie. Are we to believe you condone driving while intoxicated?
I never said I was a role model.
But what about the kids that look up to you? Do you have a message for them?
All the kids looking up to me can suck my dick. It's Portman, motherfucker. Drink till I'm sick. Clear your throat and pump nudges down the hall. Watch you laugh and cry while I laugh you die. And all the dudes, you know I'm talking to you.
We love you, Natalie.
I wanna fuck you, too.
Please.
It's for Portman.
Please.
It's for pussy. I'll kill your fucking dog for fun, so don't push me.
Wow. Natalie, I'm surprised. All this from a Harvard graduate.
Well, there's a lot you may not know about me.
Really? Such as?
When I was in Harvard, I smoked weed every day. I cheated every test and started all the
I'll sit right dead on your face and take a shit.
Natalie, you are a badass bitch.
Hell yeah.
And I always pay for your dry cleaning when my shit gets in your shoe.
What?
And as for the drug use, well, I can vouch for that. My dick is scared of you.
Okie doke. Natalie, one final question. If you could steal a smooch from any guy in Hollywood, who would it be?
No more questions. What?
All right. Short side, that's the least interesting part of the show anyway.
Okay, so hey, what's at the funk?
Oh, what's at the funk?
Eh.
Wait, what's Luke plugging now?
No.
And then, what's at the funk? What's at that funk? Funny music project. Oh, Luke's totally into it.
Just told me we had to hurry.
Worm Quartet's The Ballad of Dr. Stop,
yay,
which we played earlier, is at the funk. Devo Spice featuring Insane Ian, the song Flight Check. Robert Lunn and Spaff's Hey Old Stripper. Steve Goody's Worm Quartet style parody called Ecstasy of the Bilious Water Poodle. Hot Waffles, America's Worst Driver. TV's Kyle Stop Moping Around. Lemon Demon Redesign Your Logo. Tom Smith, Just Give the Money to Me. Note, watch Anime Fan AMV if you haven't already.
Yes, and Cirque du Soleil, we still exist. Not only do we have an album now, but we have a t-shirt that says, I want tile! And it's probably not for sale yet at the CirqueDuSoleil.net website or BaconDimples.com, but maybe it will be. That's up to Devo. He's the person in charge of that shit. But we'll most likely have them at our live appearances together, like at KeyCon. ArtByLukeSki.com. You can order art by me and get caricatures, so go check that out. Free MP3 of the Week at Lukeski.com is Bender Roboto. Upcoming tour dates, I'll be appearing at DemiCon Saturday of that weekend, doing a show in the afternoon. So please come hang out there.
That's Iowa.
That would be Des Moines, Iowa. And up in Winnipeg, Canada is KeyCon. I'll be there with Devo Spice Worm Quartet and Chris Mazzalesta. So it'll be a Cirque du Soleil show, as well as concert by each of us individually. Hypericon, which is in Nashville, my first ever Nashville convention. Nashville is mostly underwater right now.
Yes.
In fact, Sarah pointed out one of her friends was referring to it as Nashlantis.
Oh my God.
So, yeah, things are kind of fucked up down there. So we hope they're all okay. And Nerdapalooza coming up in July with myself, Devo Spice, Worm Quartet, Positive Attitude, and just added to the pre-party Friday night, Insane Ian will also be in the house.
And that's in Orlando.
Orlando, Florida.
On our next show, which will be episode 15, Luke will start adding tour dates.
Yeah.
So.
Well, go to lukeski.com to the tour dates page and you can find out the exact dates. What shade of pink are you wearing, Carrie?
I am wearing a faded light baby pink. Happened to be wearing. It's a good thing I put on a pink shirt today, because when I left the house, I didn't know we were recording today. But I'm wearing my MarsCon 2009 t-shirt, Clap to Baruda Nerdcore, with all of the artists as aliens.
Invading aliens.
Yes.
Alright, ignorant stories. I don't have any, but we have a voicemail from Arkel following up on the previous episode's thing, so we will play that now. Because we had asked him a question, and he answered us, so we want to play his answer. So here it is.
Hey, Luke and Carrie, it's Arkel, responding to your response to my voicemail you were talking about on episode 13 there. Actually, no, the kid did not take a leak on my counter, which I appreciate. In fact, the kid quite wisely completely ignored his father the whole time. The whole time his father was acting like a total douche. So there was that at least. But, I got a ton of them from 7-Eleven, and from my last job too, which is at Pizza Hut. I think my favorite ones at Pizza Hut, and this wasn't a one person, this was a category so much so that pretty much you ask anyone who works at Pizza Hut who's ever answered the phones, they'll tell you they get this at least once a week. They're the people who answer the either-or questions with an affirmative or negative. meaning, you know, thank you for calling Pizza Hut. Is this going to be for delivery or carryout? Yes. It's just the kind of thing that makes your head hurt. And, also at 7-Eleven, we get the low talkers. I mean, we get a few people in the store that can't speak English all that well, and that's kind of annoying. But I'll take them over the low talkers any day, because at least the people who can't speak English are not speaking English in a tone of voice that I can actually hear. The low talkers are the people who come in, and they'll be like, yeah, I want a pack of cigarettes. Yes, sorry I yelled at you like that. And, of course, you know, they're doing this with all the ambient noise around me, of like the register and the Slurpee machine recycling and all the other people in the store talking. And then they get mad at me when I ask them to speak a little louder. Yeah. So, yeah, the low talkers. That episode of Seinfeld, actually, where Kramer was dating a low talker, and that's pretty accurate. There really are people like that. That episode was probably the most realistic one of the entire series. Well, anyway, I'm rambling a bit now, aren't I? All right. Well, have a fun show. Bye-bye.
Yes.
Thanks, Arkel. If you want to be cool like Arkel, you can call in and speak to us. We seem to have a lot, like, the same people kind of call over and over, and let's mix it up. If you haven't called before, why don't you go ahead and call 917-LUKESKI or 917-58...
It's not 7, it's 6.
Sorry, 916-LUKESKI or 916-585-3755. I got the numbers for you.
Actually, it's 916-585-3754.
Okay. Well, I asked Josh to specifically tell me what that would be, and that's what he told me it was.
Well, he's too tall to see the numbers from that far away. 916-LUKESKI or 916-585-3754.
So the number was up there the whole time.
Yeah.
Oh, so we could have always read the digits.
Yeah.
Oh.
We're dumb. So if you have true tales of ignorance from your life that you would like to share, try to keep it under 2 minutes and 20 seconds.
Or if you want to tell us how much you love the video podcast, you can call that. And that would be kick-ass if you would.
Yes, yes. If you have comments on...
Or if you want to tell us how much you hate us, then we'll probably not play it. But, you know, it's okay.
916-585-3754. 916-LUKESKI. And you can also, of course, leave comments at badrapport.com, BADRAPPORT.com.
Or badrapport@gmail.com.
Yes, but if you want to get them right on the air, do them on the badrapport.com page. And like I said, please leave comments for this episode and for the video episode so that we can talk about both next time in great detail.
And iTunes reviews are always pleasurable.
I totally forgot to check on that again. Oh, well. Thank you
if you left one. We didn't see it yet.
So we are going to close out with a song that Carrie suggested we play. It is from episode 802 of the podcast, The Radio Adventures of Dr. Floyd. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with the show, the basic premise is Dr. Floyd and his protege, Dr. Grant, and their faithful robot companion, Chips, are scientists, and they have a time machine. And their rivals, the evil Dr. Steve and his sock-shaped assistant named Fidgert, also have a time machine. And Dr. Steve and Fidgert travel back in time to steal historical artifacts and then bring them back to the present and then sell them on eBay to make money. At least that's what he usually does. This time around, he has decided to change the entire history of the nation by going back in time to where the first American library was about to come into existence and, you know, interfere with that so that libraries never exist.
And since I really love the original that this following song is a parody of, I really, really, really enjoyed this parody.
So we asked Grant if we could play it, and he said yes. So if you like this song and you want to, get on the Dr. Floyd bandwagon and order your very own special decoder ring that glows in the dark... for reals, you can go to drfloyd.com, drfloyd.com, and sign up for the podcast. You can get...
Or go to iTunes to sign up for the podcast.
Yes.
It's free.
Yep. So, that is it for this episode.
Thank you for joining us on episode 14 of Luke and Carrie's Bad Rapport. And I hope you watch the video episode.
Yes,
and
please, please do, and please, please leave us comments on it. And yes, please share it with your other friends on the yes, internet and Twitter and Facebook and stuff like that.
Especially if they like comedy music.
Yes.
All right, I have been Carrie.
And I have been Luke.
This has been Luke and Carrie's Bad Rapport.
And my karma ran over your mama.
Insert funny, witty response here.
Word.
Where you got trouble, my friend? Right here, I say trouble right here in Boston City. Why, sure, I'm a book reader, certainly mighty proud to say it. I'm always mighty proud to say it. I consider that the hours I spend with a book in my hand are golden. Help you cultivate a big brain, common sense, and a mind's eye. You ever try to put down a suspense novel when you're only a chapter from the end? But just as I say it takes gumption, brains, and cognition to finish a book, I say that any dweeb can go and check out a novel from the library. And I call that sloth the first big step on the road to the depths of degradation. I say first, it's a 3-page early reader, then a full-blown chapter book. And the next thing you know, your son is reading for pleasure in his free time, listening to some big smarty pants librarian, hearing her talk about a new kind of book. Not a regular kind of book, no. A book without any pictures at all. Like to see some stuck-up library boy finishing War and Peace, make your blood boil, well, I should say. Now, friends, let me tell you what I mean. You got 2, 4, 6, 8, 9, 10 Dewey classifications. Classifications that mark the difference between a gentleman and a geek with a capital G, and that rhymes with B, and that stands for book. And all week long, your Boston City youth will be readerin'. I say our young men will be readerin'. Readerin' away their noontime, supper time, chore time too. Gotta read one more chapter, never mind get rooms clean or homework done or the laundry folded. Never mind buying any gifts till their parents are left with their hands empty on their birthday night. And that's trouble. Oh yes, we've got lots and lots of trouble. I'm thinking of the kids in the playpen, sweet-faced young ones peeking in the library door after school. You got trouble, folks, right here in Boston City. With a capital T, and that rhymes with B, and that stands for book. Now I know all you folks are the right kind of parents. I'm going to be perfectly frank. Would you like to know what kind of conversations go on after they finish up their latest book? They'll be talking about characters, talking about setting, talking about literary devices like scholarly feeds, then bragging all about how they're gonna go out and write out a book report. One fine night, they'll leave the library headed for the campus of the college, fraternity men, sorority women, and credit card applications that'll drag your son, your daughter, to the debt the likes of which no man has seen yet. Mass hysteria. Friends, the learned brain is the devil's playground. Trouble?
Oh, we got trouble.
Right here in Boston City.
Right here in Boston City.
With a capital T, and that rhymes with B, and that stands for book.
That stands for book.
We surely got trouble.
We surely got trouble.
Right here in Boston City.
Right here.
Gotta figure out a way to keep the children dumbed down after school.
Our children's children's gonna have trouble, 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 trouble.
Mothers of Boston City, heed that warning before it's too late. Watch for the telltale signs of corruption. The minute your son leaves the house, does he slip on a pair of brand new reading glasses? Are there newsprint stains on his index finger? A bookmark hidden in the corn crib? Is he memorizing words out of Roget's thesaurus? Are certain phrases creeping into his vocabulary? Phrases like, once upon a time and happily ever after? Well, if so, my friends, you got trouble.
Oh, got trouble.
Right here in Boston City.
Right here in Boston City.
With a capital T, and that rhymes with B, and that stands for book.
That stands for book.
We surely got trouble.
We surely got trouble.
Right here in Boston City.
Right here.
Remember, there's no one that thinks that reading a book is cool.
Our children's children's gonna have trouble.
Oh, we've
trouble,
got trouble, trouble, friends. Trouble, we've got terrible, terrible trouble. Trouble. Closing trouble, down the trouble, library trouble, deserves trouble, at least trouble, a second trouble, look.
Second look.
Oh, yes, we've got trouble, trouble, trouble.
Oh, yes, we got trouble. Here we got big, big trouble.
With a T.
With a capital T.
Gotta rhyme it with B.
That rhymes with B.
And that stands for book.
That stands for book.
Steal.
What else did you want to steal, Carrie?
I wanted to steal some crystal light from the fridge.
Oh, here, you can have mine. I promise I don't have diseases.
Can I have my own?
I guess so.
Thank you.
All right. Walnettos.